Welcome to the program for Thursday, September 6, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Industry Chatter today. My conversation with Sanjay Castellino of SolarWinds. Sanjay, thank you very much for coming all the way from Austin. I think you might be the award winner for farthest distance travel to be on Industry Chatter so far. It's great to see you.
Great. Thanks, Francis. I'm happy to be here.
Talk to me about the work that you do for your federal clients, please.
So what we do for our federal clients is we provide IT management software. So all the things that make IT systems run, from networks to servers and applications to storage, we provide the software that helps the IT folks manage that stuff better.
Now, managing those networks, one of the biggest challenges that IT folks are dealing with in government right now and in other forms of enterprise is bring your own device. I hear about that more, the challenges about having to do with that and so on, more than just about any other concept that IT people are dealing with. As you go around and talk to people in government, what kinds of things are they asking you about managing BYOD programs?
You know, I think it's interesting. BYOD is one of those things that is being driven by the users, right? People have adopted personal mobile devices in their day-to-day lives, and they've added value to what they do, and so they're trying to bring the same productivity, if you will, into the work environment. And so that's placed a unique challenge on agencies to have to deal with that. And everyone has similar concerns, right? There's concerns from how do we know what device is actually on the network? What resources are they accessing? What are the security concerns with them? Do they cause support headaches? And I'll just give you an example. It is a fuzzy line for IT folks who have to manage their environments. But if I were to bring my mobile device into my office and it doesn't work right, whose responsibility is it to fix it? And so that they're wrestling with those kinds of challenges. And, we've done some surveys of the public, from the public sector IT folks to sort of see, where are their concerns versus, commercial users' concerns. And they're a little different, but generally the same flavor. Security is still a very big concern. But I will say also probably a fear, but more so than an actual concern that's driven by experience. We asked folks how many people had actually seen a security breach due to a personal mobile device, and it was just over 5%. But another 27% said they weren't sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so that fear component sort of builds into, hey, what should our policy be, and when should we take this on?
A statement that you made there, I think, is at the crux of why this is happening so quickly. You talked about the ability of people to see in their personal lives how mobile devices add value to what they do, is the phrase that you used.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's pushing this maybe faster than other things. We were talking before we went on the air about what the precedent for this might be. Is there even one? And I thought after we talked about that a little bit, and then as you're making that statement, you go to any government gathering, whether it's technology-oriented or not, here in the D.C. area, and everybody's carrying around a tablet of some sort. Everybody's got at least one smartphone device just about. And so this is being driven by the leadership at the organization. It's a little different if a GS9 comes to you and manages to somehow get on the CIO's radar screen and says, hey, is there any way I can get this on the device? Yeah, we'll get back to you on that. But when it's the secretary of the agency, or it is somebody in the SES, or somebody at the CXO table says to you, hey, is there any way we can make this work? You put a little bit more stock to it. And it seems to me that's what's driving
this. Oh, yeah, that's where it starts, right? Because the people who want to bend the rules, if you will, a little bit, are always at the top, that they have these devices and they say, look, I know those applications are web-based, and especially as we move more towards sort of government as a service and you see more applications accessible over the web, they're like, well, I know they're web-based and my tablet has a web browser, so can I use that? And of course, when it comes from a CXO level person, that's what drives it down. And it's funny because first you see it as exceptions, right, to the rules, and then other people start to say, well, if they can do it, why can't I?
Sounds like my son's middle school.
That's right.
He's in seventh grade. That's how the same thing works there. That whole concept, though, as we were talking about, seems to be unprecedented in when it comes to technology migration in government. A lot of times we have seen people who say, I'm doing something at home with a PC that I've gotten or whatever. I'd like to be able to do it at work. But the ability to respond has not been nearly as rapid as we're able to do now. What's different now than has been different at various times in the past, do you think?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And it's tough to say, but I think this trend of sort of, I'll call it consumerization of IT, has been going on for a while, right? Organizations, you know, 15, 20 years ago, were reliant on their IT departments to do everything for them, right? If they wanted a new application, they would say, okay, well, let me go to my IT department. Then there was sort of this movement towards software as a service, right? And people who had jobs to do and couldn't get it done through the IT organization said, look, I'll go outside and I'll find a software tool. It may not be for a mission critical thing. And I think this is really a continuation of that trend. It's people saying, okay, we've done that, and now I've got, you know, my mobile device, and you know, it's not a overly complex thing. You know, I wasn't going to lug my home PC into the office, you know, but not when I got one in the office. But you know, with mobile devices, I'm already carrying it. It's already in the office. Why should I lug my laptop? Or maybe I don't have a laptop. I've just got a desktop. When I'm away from my desk, how do I keep in touch? And in today's world, I think, you know, especially here in D.C., everyone's on the move, right? It's not like you're always carrying your things around with you. So having access to the resources you need on the go is something that just becomes part of what you expect.
Now, you mentioned the survey that you conducted recently, and my notes here say that you found that a lot of agencies don't have policies and procedures in place. Now, normally, that is two things come to mind when I read that. One is, first of all, agencies are usually pretty good at establishing those. That's kind of the nature of what governments do. Yep. In one way. The other thing that comes to mind is, normally, especially when it's an internal matter, like what's on the network and what's not, normally agencies will say, absolutely zero, nothing, until we have these policies and procedures in place. That's not what we're seeing in this case. What do you think is different when it comes to that? Why is it that agencies are receptive, do you think, to allowing, even if it is making an exception for the secretary or whatever, letting somebody's iPad on the network when normally it would be no way that's happening until we know for sure how to lock it down?
Well, I think part of it is in some cases they don't have a choice, because, you know, if you make an application available on the web, let's say, and I can get to it from home, well, what's to stop me from getting to it when I'm at work, whether or not I'm on the network or not? So being on the network just becomes a way to facilitate getting at those applications, rather than the necessity that, oh, I have to be on the network to do that. Now, there are things that you have to be on the network to do, and I think that's where agencies do move slower, right? And there are lots of different approaches that folks take. A lot of people say, well, the first step, I've got to go, you know, out and make sure I can manage all these devices. And that's probably overkill to begin with, you know. You know, we find a lot of people just start with, let me find out what devices are on the network, right? Are there devices on the network that shouldn't be there? And who's using them? And so there are products on the market today that can help you understand, you know, what are the devices in the network and where are they connected, and are they connected wirelessly or not wirelessly, and who's using them. So I think you've got the technology to give you a view of what's going on in the network as a means to educate yourself really before you go define policies. And I think a little bit of why it's different in the public sector versus the commercial sector is that in private sector, people tended not to give out mobile devices, right? That was more the exception than the rule. I think what we see in the federal government is that there tends to be a policy for giving out devices to people because they've had to deal with security in the past. And so rather than saying, bring your own, they've said, well, here's one for you. And so now you've got the contrast of, well, look, I don't want to carry three devices around. How do we make it one?
Mm-hmm. Sanjay Castellino is my guest. One of the people that I spoke to recently, an agency deputy CIO, said that regarding your comment about kind of the ability to go around the network, that ubiquitous Wi-Fi has the potential to be the biggest silo breaker in government technology, because somebody literally can sit at his or her desk in a government building. If you're on the third floor of a building that's got a Starbucks on the ground floor, you can go on their Wi-Fi, and you don't need to be on the agency's network. It doesn't matter
exactly
what you can or can't do.
And forget Wi-Fi. You could just have a device that has 4G on
mm-hmm.
it, right? You don't even need to worry about Wi-Fi. But yeah, I mean, it's really ubiquitous connectivity. And the fact that we do want those applications accessible when we're not in the office – or not in our, literally in our cubicles, that we've created that connectivity. Now it's a matter of how do we manage that. Now, you do have challenges in managing that, because there are scarce resources on the network, for example, that you want to be conscious of. So, if you get a lot of devices on the network, you need to make sure that you've defined your IP address space well enough to deal with all those new devices. If they're consuming a lot of rich media content, well, how much traffic is getting consumed from that rich media content, and is it having an impact on other things that really matter? And so there are implications of BYOD. So really, I think tools that help you get a picture initially and are probably where most people need to start, and then go down the step to, okay, what do we do about this in defining policies?
You said something there that I want to pick up on when we come back from the break that I think really gets at the crux of what this is all about. We'll continue this conversation in a moment with Sanjay Castellino of SolarWinds, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A trusted 8A certified firm, Unistar Sparco Computers, is an IT solution provider that offers over 1 million IT products and office supplies. Their experienced sales team efficiently services both CONUS and OCONUS locations. Their proven past performance ranks them within the top 5% of all GSA Schedule 70 contract holders. They hold various BPAs and IDIQs as a result of personalized customer care and fast, reliable delivery. Strong partnerships with leading manufacturers enable them to provide the latest technologies with budget-sensitive pricing. They are an IBM-certified premier business partner for servers and storage solutions, and their offerings include IBM software product lines, such as licensing and renewals. Because they understand your needs, they've extended their business hours to support you, their government customers. For more information, please call 1-800-840-8400 or visit sparco.com. SPARCO.com.
This week's Experts in Health topic is high blood pressure, featuring Dr. John Golden, Chief of Cardiology with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group, who practices at Kaiser Permanente's new Tyson's Corner Medical Center.
Hypertension, or high blood pressure, is a major risk factor for stroke and heart disease, the leading cause of death in the U.S. Hi, I'm Dr. Golden. Nearly 1 in 3 U.S. adults has high blood pressure, and many are unaware of it. At Kaiser Permanente, we actively screen for and initiate treatment plans to control high blood pressure. We are the top performer in the region for controlling high blood pressure among our members. Our physicians provide comprehensive care to our members, so it's no surprise that Kaiser Permanente outperforms all the other local plans in quality measures, according to the Maryland Healthcare Commission's 2011 Health Benefit Plan Performance Report.
Dr. Golden was recognized as a top doctor in the Washingtonian and Northern Virginia magazines. Visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors, controlling high blood pressure rate as reported in HEDIS 2011.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government.
Please contact them at advancedalliant.com for potential small business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
Sure, the General Services Administration spent a lot of money on clowns, bikes, and party favors, but is the Inspector General going too far to root out waste? I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, former SEC Inspector General David Kotz weighs in, and we'll learn why some federal veterinarians don't want to go to Mexico. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with SolarWinds is Sanjay Castellino, my guest. And we talked about a point that you made in the last segment that I think is very eloquent, Sanjay, and that is the idea that this is not about managing devices. This is about managing connectivity and the ability of people to get and exchange information. I've not heard it described that way very many times, but it seems to me that by doing that, you're trying to go past the idea of the devices. Is that on purpose, or is it just the way that the conversation happened to develop?
No, I think that's absolutely the way it's headed, right? Because the device itself becomes less important, right? Take myself. I've come to DC for a day, and I have three devices with me. We're going to use a lot of different devices, but ultimately making sure that, you know, I have access to the things I need to get my job done is what matters. And, knowing where people are trying to connect from, you know, what they're trying to connect to, and then managing the resource that ultimately still is scarce, which is network bandwidth, is really what you end up having to do. Because, when there's a big event, I'll take that as an example. Let's say there's a big event going on in town. I don't know, like a Democratic National Convention, and people are watching media on their mobile devices, and they happen to be in the office at the time, right? That is sucking up a lot of bandwidth, all of a sudden, you as an IT guy, what do you have to worry about, right? You have to worry about making sure not only that mobile devices have access to things they need to, but that everything else is running well, right? If I'm running 50 streams of video over the network, those are 50 individual streams. They take up real bandwidth that are being used for work, right? Whether it be VoIP calls or, you know, data transfers and things like that. And the thing that people, I think, forget is that the network isn't, distinct and separated, you know, one network here for wireless and one network here for PCs and one network there for my data center. There is one network, right? At a physical level, there is one thing that connects, you know, all these devices together. And so when you start consuming that, you are at some point will start impacting other parts of the network. And so this is where IT folks develop policies for what gets prioritized on the network and measure that and make sure it's effective. And it's part of what IT management is having to deal with this trend.
You mentioned that the device doesn't matter and we'll use a number of different devices. I want to pursue that a little bit and use the consumer analogy. iPad came out and the infrastructure that Apple had built was one of the big selling points for that. Now, for the Kindle, Amazon has built a very similar infrastructure. Google's building a very similar infrastructure. If you want to be able to consume music and podcasts and books and video and so on, you can do it. Now, each of these are siloed. You can't move from one to the other, but you don't really lose out on any of the ultimate goal, which is to consume something, if you choose one over the other anymore. Do you expect to see that, or are you already maybe seeing that in the enterprise, where people are going to be able to do whatever they want? The device doesn't matter, and it all becomes a matter of just being able to do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, I think for the most part that's true. Look, I there are things that you don't want to do on a mobile device. For example, I'm not going to edit a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation on a mobile device, but I might look at one and I might review one. And so I think different devices lend themselves better to different tasks, right? And I think that will always be true. But in general, I want access to everything. If I had to edit a spreadsheet on my device, yes, I want to be able to do that. probably not going to do that. But if I had to, I want to be able to do that. And I want to be able to do it on any device, whether it's company issued or not.
The idea of device agnosticism is something that some agencies have pursued more than others. Is that something that at some point you think will just be a no-brainer and will be kind of the de facto way of doing business?
I think so. Unless you've got very specific security requirements or something that requires you to lock down the device in a very different way, I expect that people will want to move in that direction. So certainly civilian agencies and maybe even part of the DOD, but not all of it, will certainly want to move in that direction.
You mentioned that essentially an inventory is the most important thing, first step at least, to trying to develop a strategy to do a BYOD effectively. And I wrote down the notes who, how, and where that you want to determine connectivity at your particular agency. What's the next step after you know who's connected, how they're connected, and where they're connecting? What do you do with that information to then try to put some policies in place that are going to be useful for the end users, but also are going to protect yourself against any of the bad guys that want to get into your network?
Yeah, I think there are, that's where you come down to each agency's particular situation. There are different ways to approach this. Some will go on one end of the continuum and say, look, every mobile device we want to manage. And yes, we recognize that takes ownership of the device in a way, and so if it breaks, you might come to us, even though it's not an agency-issued device. On the other end of the spectrum, you'll have people that simply set up, let's call it, for lack of a better name, a guest network, and it's literally a different network with different Wi-Fi security codes, and you'll get on that network, and you'll have access to 80% of what you need, but with 20% of the effort, right? And I think depending on what the real needs of the users are is where you'll see people live in that spectrum, right? The 80-20, I think, works for many, many people because if you think about it, most of the applications that we might need are probably already accessible over the web. And if they're not, they're certainly moving in that direction, right? We'll talk about later things like data center consolidation stuff, but those are driving applications to be more accessible to people. A lot of those are driving, applications into the public cloud providers and things like that. So we know that they'll be accessible, in which case a guest network, really gets you most of the way there. Now, if you've got secure applications that are only available on the LAN, things like that, well, then, then you've got a different story and you probably have to manage the devices. But keep in mind, when you go all the way to that end of the spectrum, you're not just managing the device. You're managing all the software on that device. You're controlling what can be installed. Because if you want to take such a heavy-handed approach to BYOD at that point, there's a real reason for it. And you're going to be accepting of the cost along with the benefits that you get out of that.
But if you own it, then you really own it.
Then you own it.
And you've got the whole thing, and you can't pick and choose which parts of it you want to own, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Sanjay Castellino is my guest. He's with SolarWinds on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. When we come back, I want to talk about the security piece of this and what agencies are finding themselves responsible for and what the challenges are they're dealing with. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is Industry Chatter on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Engineering, IT, and intelligence professionals, we invite you to discover that everything is possible at Lockheed Martin. Explore a career with a leading provider of systems, products, and services to the U.S. government. We are conducting several job events for the rest of the month in Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Stop in to explore careers here and overseas for cleared professionals with skills in IT, engineering, intelligence analysis, and other areas. For event details or to chat with a recruiter, visit LockheedMartinJobs.com/WTOP, then click on events. You will join us as we recognize 100 years of accelerating tomorrow, a century of helping meet our clients' most defining challenges. Lockheed Martin, everything is possible for engineering, IT, and intelligence professionals. Go to LockheedMartinJobs.com/WTOP and click on events. We are an equal opportunity employer.
Here's Mariela Malero, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, on the Accelerate and Streamline for Better Customer Service panel, sponsored by CA Technologies.
The foundational design work has to be done based on what the customer needs. ELIS, the electronic platform, is all about listening to the voice of the customer, from how to set up an account to how to manage that account. It's not us managing the account. It's the customer managing the account, and we managing then the interaction that comes out of that account.
To listen to the whole program made possible by CA Technologies, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
At CA Technologies, we enable agencies to focus on service delivery, not just infrastructure, and on supporting strategic goals, not just fixing what's broken. We accelerate IT so agencies can drive innovation with the cloud and other new technologies. We transform IT to simplify complexity and free up resources. We secure IT to keep sensitive assets safe.
Find out how CA Technologies can help your agency accelerate, transform, and secure IT at ca.com/public sector.
Join Hands On Greater DC Cares for the 9/11 National Day of Service and Remembrance. In honor of those who lost their lives and the thousands who rose in service, you can volunteer at a local school, veterans facility, or community-based organization on Friday, September 7th and Saturday, September 8th. Become a company sponsor, create a team, or individually donate. Register today when you visit greaterdccares.org or call 202-777-4462. Let the spirit that united us on 9/11 unite us again.
Noticeably less sleep. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. You might not notice, but not getting enough sleep might make you worse at noticing things. At Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Gene Duffy saw it in 12 people in a one-month study in a sleep lab. The participants' sleep was cut back from 10 to 12 hours to less than 6 hours. They searched for differences in pictures on a computer, and Duffy says they performed slower with less sleep, even if they didn't realize it. Duffy says there is a lesson for the sleep deprived.
When they cut back on the amount of sleep that they're getting, especially if they do that on a regular basis, they may not realize how impaired they are by their own sleepiness.
The study in the Journal of Vision was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
With federal CIO Stephen Van Roekel's Future First Plan aiming to embed best practices into the government, agencies will need to change everything from their development methodologies to the length of the acquisition cycles. Join AFSEA Bethesda on September 26th at the Bethesda North Marriott to look at how agencies will take advantage of their new approaches to managing information technology and what impact it will have on the contractor community. Register today at AFSEABethesda.org/SEPTBreakfast.
Thanks for listening to In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Sanjay Castellino from SolarWinds. And I want to go to kind of the next logical step in the BYOD conversation, Sanjay. I want to talk about security and something that you and I were just discussing in the break, and that is the idea that there is one sure way to make sure that your network is completely safe and is completely off, out of bounds for any penetration, that's to turn it off.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're going to have to accept some level of risk at some point. And I wonder if you're seeing people in government where risk is not really anything that anybody wants to deal with. Are people finally getting comfortable with risk mitigation tactics and with the idea that it will exist and we have to figure out how to live with it?
Yeah, I think they at some level have always known it's there. But I think things like BYOD are sort of forcing the issue, right? They're saying, okay, make an explicit risk-reward trade-off, right? Before, it's always been, we're going to try and make it as secure as possible, and, you know, there's nothing that's pushing us to change that. And BYOD pushes a little bit on the boundaries of that, but it's not the only thing, right? I mentioned earlier, you know, government as a service or software as a service, right? Software applications, that's another example of a trend that is, they're sort of making folks make an explicit trade-off between access and security, right? I think a lot of people would argue that SaaS applications aren't as secure as if I had the server in my data center sitting in that room over there, right? They would say, oh, well, it's in a data center that someone else is hosting. It's not inherently not as secure because I would do more. And so right there, you're making another risk-reward trade-off. And you know, I'll sound a little bit like probably a CSO here for a minute, but, you know, security isn't the security guy's job, right? Security is a distributed activity that everyone has to take on. And in particular, the IT guys, the operations guys, are the front line of security beyond the security folks, right? Because they already are monitoring all the systems. They're already monitoring all the infrastructure. They can see when things aren't behaving right. IT organizations in the government tend to be very distributed, right? Even within agencies tend to be very distributed. And so you've got sysadmins and network admins who have access to the data. And this is the really important thing, is that no one's saying, hey, go collect new data and do a different job. You're already collecting the data. And, all you have to do is look at it in a different way. And, in the private sector, Verizon does a study every year, and they always come out with some unusually high number of incidents that could have been prevented because the data was actually already known. It's just that no one happened to look at it.
Is there, and this takes us into the whole big data conversation, where this avalanche of information is coming into agencies and they're still trying to figure out how do we sort through it and how do we cull the information that's really useful to us. And I imagine that is what is going on here, is that sysadmins are not data analysts.
Sure.
They're systems administrators. And this is a new skill set that they either will have to develop or somebody will have to develop to help them, I suppose. But what is the burden that you see coming on to them maybe in the next year to 5 years with this avalanche of information and with the change in expectations about what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, I think sometimes we give sysadmins and network admins too little credit, right? I think they have always looked at some elements of security. So, for example, they may have always looked at change auditing for files or for Active Directory in terms of user authentication. They may have already looked at network access control permissions, ACLs, right? And so they've always been doing that. It's about giving them the tools to automate the policy enforcement. So, for example, let's say that, I see 5 logon attempts that are unsuccessful from a particular user account, and I see another 10 logon attempts unsuccessful from other user accounts, but from the same IP address. Well, that clearly isn't probably someone doing good things. If there was a system that could automatically correlate that type of information and take action, I think you're really then just arming the sysadmins to do what they already know to do, but you're arming them to do it in automated fashion so that really they don't have to take on huge additional workloads, right? And there are systems available today that they can use to do that sort of thing.
That was going to be my next question. Are we in the preliminary stages or maybe even a more advanced stage of the automation of that process where that information, where you don't even have to ask the question to start the process, what information do I want to know, where a piece of software or some other thing is already in place and it presents you with this information that's been predetermined that it's something you should know?
Yeah, I think, it's always dangerous to let the software tell you what's important and what's not important. But I think if you went to any sysadmin in any agency, they could probably tell you, look, my top 10 things of top 10 bad list of things that might happen, if I had a way to detect all these and immediately deal with them, that would be great. And that software is available today, right? So you can go buy off-the-shelf log management and SIM software that you can say, okay, these are the 10 rules I'm going to set up. It will take action automatically. And then it's not a one-and-done sort of process, right? That system is collecting all the data. You can look at trends. You can explore the data and see if there are other trends that you think are unusual, and then build new rules, right? Or you could just implement rules that even enforce current security policies, right? And that's where I think people sometimes think a little too hard about this problem, right? They think about a security, a SIM architecture that has to cover every possibility. Look, it doesn't have to cover every possibility. We have distributed IT. These folks are in parts of agencies doing their job every day. You don't need a SIM that covers everything agency level down. You could have 5 SIMs in your agency because they collect data, and they may just have control over purview over one part of the network or one set of applications, and that's okay. I think too often we sort of try and find this panacea that's going to cover everything, when in reality, look, there are day-to-day problems that we can solve, and we can solve relatively inexpensively, and get them out of the way, right?
Sanjay Castellino is my guest. He's with SolarWinds and here for the hour on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Talk about continuous monitoring next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Steve Stone, Senior Vice President, PNC Bank, on the panel, The Perfect Score, supporting small businesses to achieve 100% adoption of direct deposit via ACH, sponsored by NACHA.
One of the most significant risks that any business faces is possibility of check fraud. When those paychecks are in circulation, if they fall into the wrong hands, that information about the business could be used to create fraudulent checks, and an electronic service like direct deposit eliminates many of those risks.
To listen to the whole program made possible by NACHA, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Direct deposit via ACH is good business for every business, even if you're a small business. It's simple, safe, smart, and green. It's easy to set up and use. It's confidential and reduces fraud. It saves time and processing costs and helps protect the environment. So make the change now. Visit electronicpayments.org to learn how and see how easy it is to adopt direct deposit via ACH today. Visit electronicpayments.org today.
A special investigator flashes his badge and asks to be let into the hotel room of a GSA official at a training conference. The GSA official calls it a late-night ambush. What really happened at last month's GSA Smart Pay conference? Federal News Radio's Jason Miller has an exclusive report detailing the GSA Inspector General Conference investigation and what happened in its wake. It's all part of Federal News Radio's ongoing coverage, Shake Up at GSA. Only at federalnewsradio.com. Search GSA Shake Up. The Homeland Security Department is Federal News Radio's September Agency of the Month. This week's guest is Rafael Boras, Undersecretary for Management. Hear Boras explain how DHS has improved its acquisition process, is creating a mobile workforce, and how the agency is planning for spending cuts. Listen every Tuesday afternoon at 3 all this month as we highlight the Homeland Security Department as September's Agency of the Month. Only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Sanjay Castellino, SolarWinds. And we've been talking about mobile computing and the challenges that system administrators are dealing with in securing networks. One of the buzzwords, Sanjay, that is showing up around this whole idea of security is continuous monitoring. Obviously, agencies now have to be doing that. How is that different than what agencies were doing before? And how, in your estimation, have they responded to this challenge of meeting continuous monitoring requirements?
Yeah, before the break, we were talking about systems like SIM and log management systems. But really, sysadmins, network admins, they've been doing monitoring from day one, right? That's how they manage the systems and kept them up and running. And so I don't think continuous monitoring is anything new for them. But what they're monitoring and how they're monitoring has sort of taken on a little bit of a twist. You and I were talking in the break about, data center consolidation. Well, as you consolidate your data center, whether you move it to a shared government data center where you're sharing with other agencies or even within other teams within an agency, or you move your data center into a commercial data center facility, what you care about changes, right? You have at that point inherently said, I don't care about the inner workings of this infrastructure. I care about the results and performance you deliver. And so as an IT operations manager at that point, what you care about is, are you getting the performance out of the data center that you need? Are they meeting their SLAs? Are they meeting those performance needs? And if they're not, you don't go into troubleshooting mode. you pick up the phone or send an email and say, hey, I'm not getting the results I paid for, you know, what are we going to do about it? And it becomes someone else's problem to go solve that. And so while the sysadmins take on new challenges on the one hand with BYOD and maybe having to take on some of the security elements of that, you know, they give up on things that they were doing on the other hand in this transition as you move to sort of more of a shared data center environment.
From the executive's perspective, is that transition good or bad or just the way it is, just the nature of the evolution of the IT world?
You know, I like to think we go through these transitions because they are good. Isn't always the case, but I think in this case, it is actually good. Look, at the end of the day, the reason that we're going through data center consolidation, one of the big technology drivers behind it is virtualization. And at this point, I don't think there's any question that server virtualization in particular is cost effective, right? It is saving money because you are taking, whether it's in power or heating, cooling, I should say, or even just space, you are now being able to do more with less. And so I think in the aggregate, that is good. But during this transition phase, it's a lot of work, not just in terms of actually doing the transition, but, you know, people are having to change the jobs they do because if I had 5 data centers and I have 2 now, well, I don't need people to manage 3 data centers. So those folks are being reassigned. They're doing other things, maybe having to relearn some things, learn some new things. And so the transition is always the difficult part. But I think all told, it's offering up a level of flexibility that IT organizations in the past didn't have. And so, you know, I think about you know, 15 years ago, if you walked into any agency and said, I have a new application that I'd like to run, it may be weeks or months before you had a server to run that thing on. Today, you know, may not be hours, but it's probably not, you know, weeks. It's probably measured in days instead. And, you know, if you have the flexibility to use an outsourced vendor, it is hours, right? Because you can just turn up a machine instance and off you go.
The idea of that, all of these things, that we can talk about the mechanics and the logistics and all of that, and that's all great. What are you seeing culturally inside the agencies that are doing these, making these transitions successfully? What are they doing to make sure that you don't have people that are left behind in these transitions? That's a big danger, and so on. What are they doing when it comes to the soft skills, the people skills, to make sure that these things happen smoothly as possible?
Yeah, you know, I think there it varies obviously agency to agency and what we see, but you know, I think the thing that agencies are thinking about is how do we reassign these people? What do they do? You know, where are the other needs as the IT needs change? Where do we put these people? And the people that have proactive plans around that are being much more successful than the people who, you know, are leaving at the chance. And frankly, you know, we tend to see more of the people who don't do things, because what you hear on, whether it's on community sites or, you know, when you do surveys, you hear the anxiousness. I remember, you know, early on, in the cloud, sort of data center consolidation, trend, we'd done some surveys of folks, and the number one issue had nothing to do with technology. It's what's happening to my job. And so, you do tend to see that still from time to time, but I think people now know that there's a transition and there are things for them to do. And I think we're past the, it's an unknown phase to, okay, I know, I have a feel for what this is going to look like on the other end. And so I know there's going to be things that need to be done.
My guest is Sanjay Castellino. He is with SolarWinds, and we'll wrap up our conversation on today's Industry Chatter program in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
Here's Jay. Jerry Davis, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Security, VA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by McAfee.
Progress stems around understanding what's taking place in cybersecurity in your own agency and then maturing your agency. I've seen a lot of maturation over the years. Our agencies are getting better and better at cybersecurity, cybersecurity defenses, and understanding what the threats look like and then reporting those out.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro D.C.
I'm looking to
move up in my career.
Make my mark in government.
Keep my job and still earn my degree. Earning my Master's of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University's global campus gave me direction in my career in public service. The instructors were more like mentors. They helped me to hone in on exactly what it is that I wanted to do.
The possibilities are endless. With an NASPAA-accredited MPA degree from Central Michigan University's global campus, the gold standard degree for government and nonprofit careers. Get it all at CMU's 7 local centers, Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro D.C. Call 877-679-1268 or go online at cmich.edu/MetroDC.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Brian O'Hear, who's going to tell us all of the ins and outs of investing in single-tenant net leases. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today, Sanjay Castellino of SolarWinds. We talked a lot about BYOD. We've talked about continuous monitoring. We've talked about the role of systems administrators and how that's changing. Data center consolidation. What should we take away from some of these big concepts right now? And when we're trying to predict is a word that I hate to use in the IT realm, but what's on the horizon here that we should be thinking about having to deal with in the 6 month to maybe 3 year time frame, do you think?
Yeah, well, as long as you don't ask me for my top five predictions.
I'm not going to do that.
Look, I think you and I, we've been talking about this earlier, right? Government as a service, you know, it's a nice catchy phrase, but at the end of the day, you know, if you're in IT, in an agency, I believe that your role should be about thinking through what the agency needs to be successful and how you as an individual or a team or a group enable that service to be delivered, right? And whether it means, you know, taking something you're already doing and giving it to an outsource vendor so that, you know, someone else can focus on something that they know how to deliver well, but and then you focusing on something that is hard to deliver and things that need to be, you know, iterated on and refined, you know, I think that is really where we're headed. Right?
That's really an entrepreneurial way of approaching problem solving, it sounds like to me.
I think so, right? And I think at the end of the day, if IT folks don't go there, they'll be forced there, right? They'll be drugged there by the folks who have to get jobs done. And they'll be drugged there by budget constraints and things like that will be external pressures that push them in that direction. So I think IT guys can do themselves a great service by reorienting their thinking now, right, and finding the tools they need to help them solve today's problems, right? I think all too often we think about, hey, what's the vision, right? You know, and to your point about not making predictions in IT, look, by the time we're anywhere close to implementing the vision's changed. And so you're running on that treadmill all the time, but a lot of IT folks have found a better way, right? That they say, look, we've got real problems to deal with that we can deal with tools that don't have to be some big strategic investment for us, right? They can be point investments for us that solve problems today. And I think taking that approach and then taking that service-minded mentality to it really is what's going to make them successful at the end of the day.
We only have about a minute or so left, but I want to ask you, one of the things that people tell me in the IT side that they bump up against when they're trying to utilize and take advantage, leverage some of these innovations is my acquisition shop can't work that fast. That's not how they do things. Are you seeing the acquisition side at the agency starting to gear up to be able to respond to the way that the IT leaders want to drive some of these changes?
You know, I think it varies. I think there are folks who figured out how to work with the acquisitions folks to get things through in small ways so that they can try it. Because I think, again, I'll reiterate, you know, this is not about making big investments, right? We're not talking about spending, you know, $500,000 or $1 million or $5 or $10 million. We're talking about spending $5,000 or $10,000, right? And those are ways in which you can try things. And I think the acquisition folks are finding ways to work with IT folks when they want to do that.
Sanjay, what a great time I've had talking about these issues with
too.
You. I appreciate you coming in today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Sanjay Castellino of SolarWinds, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This conversation will be archived later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.